everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I've got Rick and Tony with me as always, and we've got some news to jump into, so let's get going. All righty. First and foremost, we have the U.S. government has paid over $1 trillion in interest on its $35.3 trillion in debt for the first time. And if you've followed the mainstream narrative, this is during good times, right? There's no recession. We're all doing good. No world war or anything like that. So the budget deficit is nearly to $2 trillion. Rick, why don't you you give us your reaction? I feel like we're talking about this tangentially the same things every week at this point.
Well, it just keeps getting more and more amazing, doesn't it? I mean, you know, let's do this in the most methodical, logical way that we can, right? So number one, the US government is currently in more than $35 trillion of debt, right? So first of all, these numbers are getting so outrageous, we should probably try and get some perspective when, you know, bear in mind that a billion is 1,000 million and a trillion is 1,000 billion, right? So, you know, when you start putting that in perspective, you could spend $1 million every day for a year, right? And you only get to half a billion. So how many years of spending $1 million a day would it take to spend a trillion, right? We're starting to get into numbers that, you know, you really want to do some maths to even make sense of what's going on. So problem number one, $35 trillion worth of debt, which is insane. And so, you know, what happens when you take on debt? You have to pay the interest. So, you know, as you highlighted in that tweet, the interest payments on this debt is now $1 trillion they've spent. And that's just so far this year, right? It's only September, right? And they've spent $1 trillion on just the interest, not the principal of the loan, the interest, right? And again, let's look for some perspective. So that's more than the US has spent on national defense, more than they've spent on Medicaid, more than they've spent on veterans programs, more than higher education, more than transportation, more than housing. So, you know, I think American citizens need to bear in mind that if you're upset about the state of your housing, or if you're upset about the state of like transportation or veterans not being looked after, and, you know, I mean, just understand that, you know, more money is being spent on the debt interest payments than all the stuff that you actually need. And that's insane. And let's go further still. So, you know, this is only going to get worse, isn't it? Because the US budget deficit for this year is almost $2 trillion. So that number we started with, $35 trillion, is now increasing at a rate of more than $2 trillion a year. So, you know, give it another 3 years, it's going to be another $6 or $7 trillion worth of debt. The interest payments will be going up and up. I mean, this is crazy. I mean, at the end of the day, let's call it what it is. The US government is 100% completely, undeniably insolvent. And I don't mean insolvent in that kind of, oh, honey, we shouldn't go out for so many meals out this month. We should probably cook some meals at home. We need to tighten our belts a bit. I mean, insolvent in the way that, like, they're coming around to take your house, take your car, take your kids. Like, you are flat broke insolvent. And it's mind-boggling at this point, right? We really need to get people to understand that there is no way out of this. There is no way of voting out of this. You know, neither party has a plan to deal with this because, well, how would you? Where would you even start? Like, I don't have a solution. Well, I mean, apart from use real money like Bitcoin, but, you know, the government's not going to do that very quickly. So, big problem. And look, the last thing I'll say, seeing as it's timely, is, you know, understand how ludicrous your government is and how rubbish they are at managing money. Because do you remember on September 10th? So this is what? Just 3 days ago, but on September 10th, back in 2001, the day before the Pentagon got hit by a plane, Donald Rumsfeld came out and admitted that the Pentagon had lost $2.3 trillion worth of money. So, I mean, you know, back in 2001, they were losing money. Now the debt's massive. They can't pay for it. It's all going to get worse. And yeah, you need to opt out and adopt Bitcoin. Otherwise, man, you're going to get wiped out. Full stop.
Yeah, Tony?
Man, I couldn't have said it any better, Rick. But just to add a little bit more of this, what blows my mind is how desensitized people have become to this. It's like almost like it's part of everyday life. Okay, well, we're in debt. The government's a bunch of idiots, a bunch of thieves printing money every day like there's no tomorrow. And, you know, life goes on. We go out and have our burgers and, you know, barbecue our hot dogs and, you know, nothing's really changed, which is absurd because, you know, when the government is paying $1 trillion, like, do you have any ideas how many zeros that is? Like, if you had this money in cash, you wouldn't have a building, you know, or a set of buildings to fit that amount of cash. That's how much $1 trillion is, right? And yet everybody talks about it and then goes on about their day as if nothing happened. That paying $1 trillion means that the government is not only not paying anything for its citizens, it's not even thinking about its citizens. Like, you don't exist. You're just like something out of something floating around, you know, on U.S. territory. That's all there is. And this is the same telltale sign that happened in Lebanon when things got so bad. Okay, like the debt was so extreme. These guys were trying to pull rabbits out of hats to try to justify, to try to patch, to try to do whatever. And then one day it all went boom. And we ended up exactly where we are now. So if you are not in up in arms and like scared shitless out of this situation, there is something wrong with you because your life is about to get destroyed in a way you can't possibly imagine right now. And everybody seems to be taking it as a joke. This is not a joke. You need to protect yourself because if you don't and hope we're wrong, well, you know, maybe you make it out of it, maybe you don't. But if you want to take precautions now, get your funds out of this garbage money and into the only real money, which is Bitcoin in self-custody, not on an exchange, not on an institution, not in the sky, not in the cloud, in your full self-custody. And if you need help, pick up the phone, write an email and ask. There's always help available. We're one of them.
Yeah, no, I think, Tony, you hit on a really important point. And I think that is that most people are asleep at the wheel. I think now, in fairness to the average person, I mean, it wasn't until Bitcoin that I understood how any of this stuff worked. And so I think we've become desensitized to this notion of money printing and taking on more debt. And we're like, oh, wow, yeah, $35 trillion, that's a lot of money. But we've gone so long that people, to the extent that people have been impacted by this, they don't really realize that that's what is causing the problem. And so they just assume like we could just continue this charade forever. I think once people begin to recognize you only have two politically, or you really only have one politically possible solution, because austerity, taxing the hell out of everyone and defaulting on your debt, those aren't real politically viable options. You got the money printer. And I think even if people could make that deduction from the facts in front of them, most people still wouldn't recognize that the money printer is the source of their woes. Like the reason your groceries are getting more expensive, the reason gas is getting more expensive, all of this stuff. So I sympathize that there are a lot of people still who are just still completely on the dark, because that was me a couple of years ago. But this is a wake up call for everyone listening. I mean, we've got to wake up, make sure that your friends and family are aware that this isn't some benign tumor that's plaguing our country. I mean, this is a ticking time bomb. And Tony, unfortunately, has experienced it firsthand, but is more, you know, obviously grateful that he tells the story over and over. So, okay, let's move on here. So,
hey there, just a really quick break from Bitcoin Banter, and we'll be right back. Wanted to remind you that we, the Bitcoin Way, are the leaders in achieving self-sovereignty, whether it's self-custodying your Bitcoin properly and securely, protecting your online life and keeping it private, or even coming up with a plan B option in the event you would need to move yourself or your family elsewhere. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a few minutes to learn more from a member of our team. We hope to see you soon.
So Tony, this is a fun one for you. So your seed phrase is at risk. And this guy tells the story. And hey, by the way, shout out to one of our podcast guests, Adrian Cersenia, who shared this with me. So this guy's brother fell victim, had a physical attack on his seed phrase. And so I'm reading through this, and he said he only had two copies of his seed phrase, one on paper stored in a locked safe. Not bad, should have stamped it in the metal. But the other was a photo of that paper stored in a secure folder on his phone. Tony, should you ever store your seed phrase on an internet-connected device?
Man, when I read this, it really broke my heart because I can feel the anguish and pain of this guy seeing his money just evaporate. But this is, you know, unfortunately, this is like one of these common mistakes that keep happening simply because of pure ignorance. You know, like, I mean, we've been victims of the whole convenience world, right? I mean, taking a picture, putting it on a phone, thinking it's secure, you know, yeah, it's not too much trouble. I can get to it whenever I want. You cannot do this anymore. These old habits that we've, you know, we've had our whole lives, all of these things must be destroyed and replaced with actually doing the work the right way. And this involves learning new steps. This is a classic unfortunate mistake that could have been easily avoidable. The guy put a seed phrase on his phone for one, then went ahead and downloaded an unknown application from God knows where, which turned out to be a malware. So again, you know, like I've said this many times, if somebody has either physical or remote control of your device, all bets are off. It's, you know, they have all the time in the world at that point, do whatever it is that they want. So unfortunately for this guy, his money was stolen. And this will continue to happen as long as people prioritize convenience over responsibility. Again, all of these things are 100% avoidable easily, but you have to learn how, and you have to be disciplined to keep following up, you know, with the steps that are required to ensure that, you know, the bank, you are the bank now. This bank of yours remains airtight forever. No exceptions. There's no being lazy about this at any point in time, because as we clearly saw, once the money's gone, it's gone forever.
Yeah, it reminds me, is sort of an analogy. I remember hearing Lynn Alden talk about post-COVID, the supply chains, how things were breaking down. And she talked about how for years and years we'd been, and by we, I just mean companies and governments, had been building their supply chains for effectively expediency, right? Like convenience and not robustness. And so when like a real problem hit, all of a sudden you've got supply chains falling apart, people can't get the things they need, you know, raw materials are hard to get to the factories and all of that stuff. And it just makes me think that perhaps that's what we've adopted that model, as you said, you know, Tony, of convenience in so many aspects of our life, that we aren't, you know, in many cases willing to do the hard work to just take on that responsibility and manage the most important things ourselves. Rick, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, oh man, I mean, you know, you hate to see it, right? I know exactly how this guy feels. You know, one day I woke up and discovered all of my Bitcoin had been hacked and stolen. And it's hard to describe what that sort of gut punch feels like, right? But it's extremely unpleasant. Now, you know, our setup and what happened to us is slightly different to what happened to this guy, but there are some similarities. You know, our seed phrases were backed up, but stored online. I mean, we did encrypt them in a file that, you know, was meant to protect them. And in our case, unfortunately, it was the encryption just wasn't strong enough. And that's how hackers targeted us and managed to get our seed phrases. But, I think the bigger point here is maybe not to pull apart necessarily like exactly the mistakes he made. I mean, they're relatively obvious, right? Like number one, storing your seed on an internet connected device, you know, bad move. And then number two, you know, downloading unknown software. You know, even if you're not a Bitcoiner, doing it, that is risky, right? You're inviting malware onto your phone or your laptop, and you know, some of these things will record all sorts of information about you that could be, you know, used to blackmail you or harass you or extort you and all this. So, you know, a couple of mistakes that definitely should be avoided. But, you know, moving more to the point of, you know, what can we learn from this? I think it's that, like Tony was saying, you know, Bitcoin requires you to take a totally different approach and mindset towards all of this stuff. For so long, we've got used to outsourcing our trust, outsourcing our security. And Bitcoin is just a paradigm shift that a lot of us are not necessarily too tuned into yet, which is, yeah, Satoshi built something that lets you be your own bank. But if you're going to be your own bank, then you're also the head of security. All the responsibility lies with you. There is no safety net. So, just running around and making do with something quick and simple, like, oh, I know, I'll just take a picture of it and secure it in a secure folder on my phone. Like Tony says, it's just going for convenience. But at the end of the day, if someone hacks into your bank account and steals your money, then the bank will find a way to get that money back or reimburse you. But in Bitcoin, that's not the case. So you can't afford to make any mistakes. You have to think about it like a cybersecurity professional would. You have critical data that you absolutely cannot let anyone else get close to. And that is a cybersecurity problem in a nutshell, basically, right? So, if you haven't got, loads of experience in cybersecurity, then it makes sense to slow down, think about it, either massively upskill yourself, right? Or find someone that can help you along the way and train you and give you the skills you need. But if you're not taking it that seriously, then you are just you're really risking it. Like you're waiting for the inevitable. So, having been through it myself and knowing how savage it is, if I could get through to anyone listening, it would be just, oh man, 10x the amount of effort and attention you put on securing your Bitcoin, because it's you'll never regret it.
Right. And the sad thing is that doing it the right way isn't really materially harder than doing it the wrong way. It's just understanding that there's best practice. There are right ways and there are wrong ways to do this. And for everyone listening, that's what the Bitcoin way does. So check us out if you're interested. All righty, Rick, tweet that you shared from the Bitcoin way. It's Bitcoin collaborative custody is for people who aren't ready to take the training wheels off just yet. We train those who want to go further. I think this is a good segue from the last conversation. What were you thinking when you shared that?
Look, I mean, first of all, I want to be fair to everyone here and not just we don't promote collaborative custody because we don't offer it, right? But I don't want to just run out here and start panning different companies that do. Just for me, I mean, let's go right back to Satoshi's white paper, right? He has written a piece of software here designed with this explicit purpose of not requiring any third parties to operate and be functional. And the design decisions that Satoshi made to build Bitcoin is heavily centered around that idea, right? So the first thing I think is worth pointing out to anyone that wants to know more about this is that you do not need third parties, full stop, right? It is not a prerequisite. So, if you ever find yourself thinking that these kind of companies are essential, just understand that collaborative custody is not essential. And I think, is it a better solution than just leaving your coins on an exchange? Yeah, I think that's fair enough, right? Like leaving it on an exchange gives, another company complete 100% control. And collaborative custody moves you a little bit in the direction of you having more of the control. However, I think a lot of the chat out there about this kind of solution is that it's almost perfect, right? And that this is the way that most people should go. And I just don't know if I fully agree with that point of view. Because there are loads of trade-offs, and I think there's more risks associated with collaborative custody than perhaps is discussed. You're certainly not going to find a really detailed list of the risks and the drawbacks of collaborative custody from the companies who necessarily promote it, right? Because they want to promote it, not tell you that it's a bad service or that there's any downside. So, and finally, Bitcoin becomes really powerful when you control it. It's like a tool. And when you're using that tool to its full effect, you can only really achieve that when it's yours, right? That's self-sovereignty. That's permissionless money. So, for me, it's kind of like it's a halfway house. It's slightly better than an exchange, but I really think people should go the whole hog if they want full protection, full peace of mind. It requires you to get a few more skills, maybe, but you can get them. So just go further is the point of the tweet, really.
Well said. And I'll just say for myself, I was in a collaborative custody arrangement prior to hearing Tony on a podcast, I think late last year. And I you know, I was piecing this together, and like that was like the final nail in the coffin for my collaborative custody setup. I knew I needed something better. And the interesting thing is, I feel more confident with Bitcoin in full self-custody. Like a lot of the trade-offs that people think that you have with full self-custody, like I sleep better at night knowing that I don't have this counterparty that, you know, could fail or whose app could be censored, who I have to use to transact with my Bitcoin or whatever. Tony, obviously you don't believe collaborative custody to be a panacea. What are just some of your concerns with it at a high level?
At a high level, I mean, it's very hard to understand why I'm so adamant against things like collaborative custody. Is because unless you've experienced total and complete loss, you don't understand what it truly means to trust no one other than yourself, especially when it comes to your money. All right, now collaborative custody, on the surface, it's marketed as a good thing, and yes, it does have its good points. Now, anything is better than leaving your money on an exchange. So we all agree on that. However, the way collaborative custody is being marketed as, you know, it's not a single point of failure, et cetera, fine. Okay, there has some merits to it. But collaborative custody is still preying on the old bad habits that we have, which is still relying and depending on someone else for convenience or the illusion of safety. All right. What a lot of people are not aware of in collaborative custody is that when you embark with any institution, doesn't really matter. Most of them, I'd say, not all of them, there are exceptions, but most of them, for starters, you have to KYC yourself. Okay. So everything about your identification is now shared with this company that you know nothing about other than what they've marketed to you. So do you know how well they're storing your data or protecting it? No, you don't. Do you know if these people have a cybersecurity team that's always auditing these protocols and making sure your data is safe? No, you don't. Do you also know that these companies have full eyes on your wallet, meaning they know how much you have, they know what you buy, when you buy it, how much of it you buy. They have everything. Now, if somebody was standing behind your shoulder every time you went to the bank and transacted, I don't think that many people would be very comfortable with someone else knowing. But yet, because, you know, it's collaborative custody and because they have a key, that's okay. So you may not be paying attention to it much now because Bitcoin's, you know, fiat price is still around 58,000. It doesn't move you that much. But if you wake up tomorrow and Bitcoin's worth a million, 10 million, 100 million, I don't think many people would appreciate somebody else knowing exactly what they're doing, right? And you still require their assistance in the event you screw up something. So with a collaborative custody, you're not really learning anything, okay? You're learning that if you lose one of your keys, you can call these people and they will help you. That's all you're learning. But true Bitcoin self-custody, the way the white paper was written, the way Satoshi envisioned it, is that at the end of the day, no one needs anyone other than themselves. You can learn the tools. They're easy. They're not that complicated, but they're just new. You follow a few steps. You memorize them. You practice them a few times. It's done. Okay? So there's no dependency on people that, one, don't have the tech background and are just offering collaborative custody because they just read the manual and know how to guide an application. What happens if that application disappears? What if the app store shuts it down? What if the government coerces them to do something in this app that you have zero control over? Now, some companies might tell you, yeah, we have a fail-safe. It's documented on our website, how to recover everything somewhere else. Have you seen that documentation? How many people are actually going to go through with it? It's like a completely foreign language. Even to someone with experience, it's like alien technology. To go through that surgery and that headache, who's going to do it? I would bet less than 0.01% would actually do it if they understood this is what they had to go through if something goes wrong. So why do it? If you want multi-sig, you know, the whole safety of having multiple wallets, we can show you how it's done, with the difference being it involves people that you trust. It doesn't involve some faceless institution. It doesn't involve depending on anyone else other than people in your immediate trusted circle, right? So everybody's fully trained from A to Z, exactly what they need to do in the event of anything. right? Again, you guys become the captains of your own ship. You don't need us at some point. You don't need anyone at some point. That is the essence and ethos of Bitcoin. To get rid of the old habits, learn the new ones, and pass those on forever. Okay? So as long as you still buy into the illusion of safety and use subpar products, I see that all the time. Because it's multi-sig, it's okay if we use, you know, bullshit hardware wallets that connect to a computer that are closed source, that are whatever, because it's multi-sig, it's safe. No, it's not safe. You know, this is the rubbish spewed by people that have zero tech background and don't give a damn other than selling a service. All right? Because if you understood this technology and you really cared about the security of individuals, you take no shortcuts, no compromises on any stage of all this process. So this is why I don't like this model of self-custody, of collaborative custody, because there's a lot of details, like I just mentioned, this is just a few of them, that nobody talks about. It's all marketed to take advantage of people's ignorance, of people's fears. Oh, you're going to lose your Bitcoin, so you need us. No, you don't need anyone. You just need a good teacher to teach you what you need to know, and then you'll be rock solid going forward. So that is my take. But that being said, anyone that helps bring people out of the fiat system into Bitcoin, for me, is a win. So if you want to start off that way and eventually find your way into what we do, that's also fine. Just understand that marketing is marketing, okay? You need to be aware of all the facts, and then you make a decision on your own of what you need. And ultimately, no matter what happens, you're going to realize that at the end of the day, you will not want to depend on anyone other than yourself. But step one, get out of fiat. That thing's going to zero. It's a complete train wreck waiting to happen. Step two, get your funds off an exchange. Step three, pick whatever you want, okay? But at the end of the day, just understand that your journey will end in Bitcoin, full 100% self-custody, if you never want to lose your funds.
Well said. Okay, last one just for fun. I don't know how Tom Luongo got a hold of Tony's weekend to-do list, but be ungovernable, cyberbully politicians, don't believe anything the media says. Tony, what's your first task this weekend?
Man, I don't know how this guy got a hold of this list, but that's definitely my weekend. Every weekend, it's my to-do list on every weekend. Owning your money,
being Tony was ungovernable. Hacked.
Yeah, of course, he got a hold. Tom Luongo is awesome, by the way. Whoever doesn't know him, look him up. Watch his podcast. This guy, you know, he tells it, you know, exactly the way it's supposed to be said, unfiltered, the truth. Gotta love him. But yeah, being ungovernable is the only way to do that, is when you own your money. You know, unconfiscatable. It is the ultimate sense of power, because nobody can threaten you with the one thing that can affect your life, and that's your money, right? So if somebody wants to tell you, you know, I'm going to shut down your bank account, be my guest. You know, I'll give it to you. Have fun with it. You know, so, and Bitcoin self-custody. There's no other way. You know, like we can joke about it. You can laugh about it. You can deny it. You can ignore it. Ultimately, something's going to happen where you're going to FOMO right into it. So you might as well do it now when there is no panic, and get your, you know, your affairs in order properly. And, see what the future looks like from now. You don't have to wait. Anybody can do it.
It's a good place to wrap up. Gentlemen, thank you. For everyone listening, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We would love to schedule a call with you and chat about our services. Full Bitcoin self-custody, no compromises, no trusted third parties. We've got online personal cybersecurity services as well, privacy phones, Plan B, residency to citizenship programs, so you can be a fully self-sovereign individual. That is our mission. Guys, thanks. Always a pleasure. Look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers.